Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. Wherever you are in the world, welcome to Visions with me, Eulalie Wickham-Ashby. And today I feel so excited, so bubbly to have in my presence Kim Miller, better known as Site One. She's Barbadian, so the gathering 2020 has already started with us in the community of persons living with disabilities, and she's here on holiday, so I took the opportunity to interview and have a good chat with Kim. Welcome to the program, Kim.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure. So, Kim, as I said in the introduction, you're Barbadian.
Yes.
So tell us a little about yourself. Where were you born in Barbados?
I was actually born here in Jilks Village in St. James, Barbados. And I went to live with my great-grandmother in Station Hill. And so I lived with her for my up until I was about 5 or 6. And then I went to the United States where they got their attention on me and giving me a comprehensive education and, you know, just letting me experience the world as a young woman and then as a teenager and you know, as an adult. I don't think they expected I would ever have been a disabled adult, you know, having had a sight impairment. We weren't prepared for that.
Right.
But thankfully, you see, the Almighty is ever knowing, and I was able to go to the States as a little child. And so when this impairment came, I had a lot of unknown resources to me. I'm sure which I wouldn't have gotten here had I here. So, that's the master plan. I wasn't supposed to be here until now.
Okay, fantastic. And what was the transition like moving from a conservative, laid-back Barbados to a hyped, go-get, you know, very...
Well, see, when I moved to Barbados, I was young, so I didn't know there was a real difference. I saw that difference when I was a teenager, and you know how your parents are like, you're going down south for the summer, you know, they try to get you out of the city for the summer. One summer I came here, and the difference was definitely marked then, because I felt I was not as free, even though no one said the words, you're not free here, you know, to do as you wish.
Right.
Following the community and following the people of the nation, you knew that this is not America. You can't do and say sometimes the things you want to do and say.
Right. Okay. So you would have gone on then to, you know, got your full education.
Yes.
And went into the world of work.
Yes.
What was the work experience like for you?
I am old school. So when I entered the world of work, first off, the minimum wage was $3.25. It seems like nothing now. And there was no such thing called Windows. There was no guy called Bill Gates yet. There was a computer system called Wang. Okay. And you had to count down how many spaces. There were still typewriters and things like that. So I was blessed in that I went into the corporate world right before the advent of Windows and Apple and all that, because I was able to get a real firsthand education on the computer and what a computer was, what it was used for. So I was at the forefront of that movement. Pretty much, again, being blessed, I find myself at the forefront of many, many movements, including this one.
Okay. And what profession you went into?
I worked at the Board of Education in New York City, and I worked for the high school division. And my job, believe it or not, was writing up incident reports. Back then, there weren't many incidents. You know, you had a fist fight after school, it was an incident. Now, I couldn't even imagine having that same job with all these unfortunate school shootings and things of that nature. I can't imagine what that person who did the job I did 20 years ago, what that person's job must be like now. They probably can't even sleep. But again, being blessed, I was able to, be able to work under four school chancellors. And again, got to see how the departments of education, how those gears worked.
Okay. And I know you told me that you were also into the area of finance.
Yes. After I left the Board of Education, it was my first job out of school. I literally went to the Board of Education. I was 15 years old as a cooperative education student. And back then, that means you went to school 1 week, you worked 1 week. So that's where I was able to gain experience. When I graduated, I was hired by the New York City Board of Education. But then it was the only thing I had ever done, and I thought I was a fashionista, so I went to school for fashion. I got the degree, and I absolutely hated it. People think that it's all this glam when you see those glossy pictures right. on the magazine. It is grunt work, and I didn't like it. And so I got the degree, and then I didn't know what I was going to do. And then a friend of mine who was a contractor was like, come work for me. And I did, and I went to work for a communications firm. And landed in finance. Now, I can't balance my checkbook, but I was balancing a $15 million budget, and I was good at it.
Couldn't balance your old checkbook.
And I didn't have 15 cents, never mind 15 million. So, it was great.
Right.
So, those two things were the foundation at the time that I didn't know. Mm-hmm. Education and finance would be the two things that I would need now.
Okay.
And here they are.
Right. And I know Kim because while you have been here, mm-hmm. you would have had the opportunity to talk to some young people
with
disabilities, and you shared part of your story. So mm-hmm. that's what I want you to do now in terms of your acquiring your sight loss and what that experience was like for you.
It was very shocking because I lived a life like pretty much everyone. I worked Monday through Friday, and we scramble around and do the laundry, the grocery shopping, and all those things over the weekend.
And party.
That too. I didn't want to say the party and the cocktails, rapping, clapping, and finger snapping.
Right.
And then I started slowly losing sight, but I didn't know that's what was happening. I just thought I needed stronger glasses, and when I started putting blackout covers over my windows, I knew something more serious was wrong, but like everybody else, fear of the unknown. I wanted to know, but I didn't want to know mm-hmm. what was going on. And finally a friend, made me go. And for the first time I heard the words retinitis pigmentosa, legal blindness. And I'm like, they don't know what they're talking about. That's so not true. But from the moment they gave it a name, all of the symptoms came into play.
Right.
And I went from having this really awesome job that I liked and driving a brand new vehicle and beautiful apartment overlooking the water to letting that all slide away because of eyesight I didn't understand. And you know how our culture is. We don't want to tell anybody.
Correct.
As though people can't see for themselves mm-hmm. what's going on. And because I did that, pride goeth before the fall, I allowed myself to become homeless and live on a train.
Wow.
From having an executive job and having the big car and having the big home and, having that experience. And then I was living on a train. I slept in my own vomit. I slept in my own urine. And when you have hit the bottom, you know you need real help. And so that's what I let happen to myself over an eyesight impairment that I didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can block one person, just one, from going that route. And when I was on the bottom, I had no place else to go but up.
Mm-hmm.
I had no place else to go. And once I started letting people in, and I'm going to use an old-time analogy, I'm like Steve Austin. If anybody knows who that is, that's the $6 million
man.
Right. In the beginning when he crash lands, and that was the old person. That was the girl crash landing. I had to be worked on from the inside out, from mm-hmm. the mental, from the physical to the physical, back out in and out again. And I had to let people in to do that. So I had to leave my ordinary life behind and embarked on this trailblaze I wasn't ready for.
Right. I think one of the things that happened to us, because I also have the same eye condition as you, retinitis pigmentosa.
Right.
And, you start to lose that vision, particularly at night or in dark places.
Yes.
And then it slowly deteriorates.
Right.
So I understand the emotions that would have overwhelmed you.
It was very,
yeah.
I was angry at I guess I would say the world at large, because also too, I was a young woman. Mm-hmm. I was in my mid to late 20s when this started happening. Mm-hmm. And at the time, my girlfriends are now trading in sports cars for minivans because they're now getting married. They are now having children. They're not elevating on their job. And I felt like they were going ahead and I was moving in quicksand backward. Right. Mm-hmm. What I didn't understand was I was being prepared for this time in my life. But you don't understand that when you're going through the drama and the trauma, you think, God, why me? What right. are you doing to me? Mm-hmm. What have I done? Mm-hmm. What I had to understand was God wasn't doing this to me. He was doing this for me. Right. Because if we're not battle tested, we're not battle hardened. That mm-hmm. means we're not battle ready.
Okay.
And I had to be ready.
Right. So then how did you move from being homeless, sleeping on a train? And share with us exactly what sleeping on a train meant. Because in our minds, Ivy may be thinking, oh, you just go on the train at right. night.
You know, I have another friend who is also sight impaired. And she came up with the name. When I told her I was living on the train, the only possession I had to my name was a little red rolling case. Mm. That was it. All of my worldly possessions. Now, I walked out of my apartment one day. I took what I can carry, and I just left everything behind. Mm-hmm. I couldn't carry it. I couldn't pay the rent. There was eviction notice on my door. It was bad. Mm-hmm. So I just packed a bag of whatever I can carry and just left. And I rode around up and down on the train. I didn't know where to go, what to do, and every day I would just lose more sight and more sight. And then finally, I had to get help. I couldn't do it by myself. And we as women, whether we have an impairment or not, we are told we can do anything. We can have anything. You don't need no man. You can get the big house and the big car and the big this, that, and the other. But when you can't do something as simple as cross the street, what color is the light? What color are my shoes? It's a humbling and deflating and debilitating experience. Mm-hmm. And you don't know how to. We don't know how to ask for help. And worse, we don't know how to receive that help gracefully. And those were two of the issues I had. Asking for help and then receiving the help. Because I needed the help of others, both sighted and unsighted, in order to get through. All of this was new to me. I had to surround myself with people who knew more than me, which means I had to stop hiding.
Right.
And I was hiding between the truth and the lie, the light and the dark, the girl and the woman. Mm-hmm. I had to come out and reveal myself, and that's the only way I could get the help I needed and deserved, quite frankly.
Well, I'm now meeting you, the new woman, and I certainly appreciate your candidness, because I think that quite often, for persons who acquire disabilities or even who have been born with disabilities, they find it so difficult mm-hmm. to share their true feelings of what they're experiencing
right.
and how other people treat them, make them feel mm-hmm. isolated or just plain loss of self-confidence
yeah.
and you know, I just lost
my way, yeah,
yes,
for sure.
Right.
And I was lucky, again, I didn't give my friends the credit they deserved. I hid from them and they kept saying, no, something's wrong. And when you have a good friend, it's better than pocket money. And I lucked up and I had several that they didn't stop asking questions. They didn't stop coming around. They didn't stop calling. When they didn't see me, they came to my home and demanded that the leasing office open the door, even though they're not on my emergency contact. And they're mm-hmm. like, if you don't open this door, we're calling the cops and we're going to have it taken down. And I was inside. I just wasn't coming out, and I wasn't letting anyone in, and that had to stop in order for me to get the help I needed.
Okay, so tell us about your move back up.
So I remember getting off the train, and I called a girlfriend, and I yelled to the guy, can I make a phone call back then? Cell phones, yeah, okay. It was like $100 a minute back then.
Woo.
And he said, yeah, he buzzed the gate out so I could come out, and I called a girlfriend, collect. I just called someone at random. And again, at that time, people are now losing house phones. Everyone's starting to get cell phones. So I had mm-hmm. to call someone who had a house phone and call collect.
Right.
And she said, yes, I'll take the charges. And I just remember saying, I need your help. I really need your help. And she said, where are you? I'm on the train. I really need your help. And she just said, can you get to me or do you need me to come out and meet you? I said, just tell me where to go. And I did. I went and She did. Here's my girlfriend, brand new baby in one arm, boobs full of milk, and me bawling in the other. So that's how I started to get the help. And she called her husband, said, you got to come home. I need your help. And he did. And they just helped me clean up because, of course, I probably looked like a tragic mess. Mm. And I remember, as I said, saying, I'm nothing and no one. I'm nothing and no one. I'm nothing and no one. And they took all of my girlfriends are not friends of each other. They are friends of mine. They got to know each other so that they can aid and support me in getting back on my feet. And that experience was humbling, and it taught me how to ask and receive assistance. And they were there for me as a support team. And a lot of times people don't reveal because they don't have support. Mm-hmm. And I had an overwhelming amount of support, both in the United States and here, because I was fortunate to meet, you know, Brenda Etienne Robinson, who is the owner of Be First Convenience. Mm-hmm. And she became my support system here.
Okay.
Get out of New York. Get out of the fast-paced movement. Come to Barbados. This is where you're from. This is your home. Relax your mind. Go to a slower speed and understand what it is you're doing. Understand what it is where you're going. Then you can go back to New York and then put all of that into motion.
Lovely.
Right. And because of her being here, again, same thing, Be First Convenience, working with Red Rolling Case, Inc., we got to the level now where she made an expansion on her business to make it a mini mart, which would be operated by a blind person.
Fantastic. And this is the type of advocacy and push that we really need to see happening right across our country, right across the world.
Right.
So that persons with disabilities can be very involved.
But
in
they are more
the economic and social life.
There are more shops out there that are willing to be trained. You know, Be First Convenience is one, and Yardie Catering is another in Eden Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, what happens is they know the nuance. Although they're sighted, they have been taught and accept and expand on the nuances of being blind.
Correct.
What is one of the nuances? How distressing is it for you as a blind or visually impaired person to go to a shop and they put your change in your hand? You have zero
idea. And not explain it to you.
Right. That's not going to happen at Be First Convenience. That's not going to happen at Yardie Catering, because they're going to go through the mechanisms with you. They count it out, count it down, as well as they have a familiarization with the Braille, the grade one Braille.
Right.
And they are sighted folks. So we are making the push. We just need more voices, more numbers, and it can happen. It will happen.
Right. So tell us about Red Rolling.
Well, Red, I have another friend who is also visually impaired, a man. His name is Sherlock Washington. So they formed forces, myself, him, and another sighted person, to create Red Rolling Case, Inc., because why? It's a homage to the time when I was homeless.
Yes.
Right? And so we use that as its foundation to help people not become homeless through their sight loss.
Mm-hmm.
We help make inroads in the mass market and in the media as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is there are lots of beautiful, sexy, sensual, vibrant, talented women who don't get a shot just because they can't see. We won't get the shot. We won't be the love interest in the video or the movie or get the football or basketball captain or be in the cover of the magazine just because we can't see. And that isn't fair. So we make inroads into that. So we go into stores now and we train. Just like when you see the sighted folks, when they see the Visa and MasterCard logo, they'll be the blind ribbon logo as well. And that tells the sighted person that this store has been trained to accessibility and the language of the blind.
Okay.
Also, when they see that ribbon, they'll know that the person needs sight assistance. They may not be using a cane, but they will be wearing the ribbon.
Okay. So tell us, describe the ribbon for us, Kim.
The ribbon is black and white. It's on our website, SightOne, SYGHT1.com. It is black and white, and the dots do spell out the words Braille, B-R-L. And a lot of people think it is the Braille code, and it does represent it. But what it is an immortalization of my eyesight. When I first started losing sight, that's what I saw. Everything was white with little black dots all over it. So I guess you can say my vision gave me my vision. Mm-hmm. So now we are using this symbol as a soft symbol around the world to let manufacturers, product lines know that the blind and visually impaired in the United States, anywhere are 10 million strong, and they're growing every single day. This is a niche market that manufacturers are not exploring, they're not tapping into, and we need to be vocal about that. As I stated before, such as when we listen to these commercials and there's no words, just music and sound, and hey, about 20 million people have just been knocked out. You have just lost sales from a fraction of folks in 20 million. Who are you marketing to and why? What are you saying? Because and we show these commercials to blind, to sighted folks without showing, and 9 times out of 10, they have no clue what the commercial is unless they can see it.
Okay. Well, that is quite true, you know, Kim. I think that business owners, business people, corporate society, corporate sector, don't really think of people with disabilities, people with vision loss, the deaf and hard of hearing as a viable consumer.
Right.
You know, we will only consume specific products.
Right. And that is
not understanding that we are human beings. We live at home. We have our own families. We live with our parents, aging parents, brothers. So we also have to consume everything like food, clothing.
They don't even think, and this may be, I don't know if I could say this on air, but they don't think that we're intimate. Mm-hmm. Really? Where all those kids come from? Just saying.
Yes.
Baby powder is not the kind that you add water and baby appears. Those blind kids are coming from somewhere.
And it's not like what we would have heard years ago, that the baby came from the stock or the airplane.
Right. You find it on the front porch. And no, that's absolutely not the case.
Right. So tell us some more about your SightOne.
Well, SightOne, you find the blind awareness ribbon. Mm-hmm. You find out everything about me. I'm an entertainer. And so what I do also is I entertain and I tell some jokes, which are all about being blind, such as dealing with sighted people. Mm-hmm. High-sighted people, some of you are not that smart, you know, because they give us directions and they point.
Yes.
Not really clear on over what there. That's about. The nodding of the head. Or if you're standing on a corner, they want to help you, great. But they don't give you any warning. The next thing you know, you're propelled across the street. You know, so I talk about that. And I think humor is the best venue.
It is. I'm now learning how to use it a little more.
Exactly. You know, it's the best venue to convey a message to folks that may not necessarily get it the first time. Or people just won't get it unless it's happening to them. Mm-hmm. You know, so I find that, you know, the SightOne is the home of Sight and the Blind Awareness Ribbon. It's an offshoot of Red Rolling Case Inc. Mm-hmm. Sherlock Washington, myself, Sherlock is called him the magic guy because he's into all the gadgets.
Okay.
And they call me Sight because I don't know why, I'm the spokesperson, so I'm out in the front all the time. Mm-hmm. And a question I get asked a lot is, what do you see? And my question back is, what do you see? Because that's important for us to know as well.
Right.
Are you seeing a woman first? Are you seeing a blind woman first? What are you seeing first? And that's the question that I get. I ask, you know, sighted folks a lot because I get asked that a lot. What do you see? Mm-hmm. And I'm very interested. I get a whole array of answers, some not so nice. But it's important to know what they see. Mm-hmm, that's important for us so we can answer back.
Right. So, Kim, now that you're back here in Barbados after a few years, what has this experience been like coming back as a woman who's visually blind and a woman who has, your own confidence, your own style of life?
It's different. I feel like flypaper. I feel like people are attracted to me because of that nuance. Mm-hmm. They are not used to seeing not only confident women, but confident women with disabilities, not just blindness. Just mm-hmm. You know, could be, you know, like you said, deaf, being in a wheelchair, being cerebral palsy, or whatever the case may be. We collectively, to the outside world, are not society's norm. So we are most time relegated to the sidelines. And I think for the first time in a lot of arenas, they have someone standing up and saying, no, I'm not and will not be second-class citizenry of any arena, none. Mm-hmm. When I come into your place, I'm going to get the business I deserve, the assistance I desire. Mm-hmm. See, for us in the States, if you don't give me this 5 minutes, we're going to shut your business down for 5 weeks, one or the other. And I think when more people here are more confident, and I think they are, they just don't want to step out on faith. They have never seen it done before, and so they don't really know how to go about it. I've never seen it done before either, so I am the excavator. I'm moving territory and making rules as I go.
Right.
So I'm the one that's living in these shoes, proverbially. Mm-hmm. And I'm the only one that can really make a sound decision as to what I need. Mm-hmm. Now I can tell the sighted person to aid me in carrying it out.
Right.
But I have to be at the spearhead, the front of what my needs are. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can't tell me what those are. I have to tell you.
So Kim, mm-hmm. our time has caught up with us, but it really has been a joy chatting with you and just feeling that strong, confident, you know, bubbly personality coming mm-hmm. through. And I think that I would want to give you the final moment to share your thoughts with us in terms of what you would like to see happen or what you plan to do.
Well, I would like to definitely see especially the blind and visually impaired community here in Barbados, my home country. I want to see them come together and start to advocate for themselves. Let me help you help yourselves. Let me help you help sighted people to help you, right? So that you can live a life that is confident and vibrant and full. There should be no one without help or support or being able to contact someone. If you feel like you need help and support and you're not getting that, mm-hmm. please email me, sight@sightone.com, syght@syght1.com. Any equipment or tools and things of that nature that you know may need, you can reach out to us and we will definitely get you a link, get you some information. And I'm definitely proud of the project between Red Rolling Case and Be First Convenience, which is on First Avenue in Lower Carlton. Woo-hoo! And and putting the blind back to work, yes. giving them a sense of purpose and pride, and then lending to the local and domestic economy, especially expansion, and then things will happen for them, for themselves. They're making money for themselves.
Correct.
So our launch date is May 11th, which is Mother's Day. So we will have a location, and when we get that location noted, we'll definitely let you know. But we're definitely going to be training and putting the blind back to work for sure.
Fantastic, Kim. I want to commend you for giving back to our society. Mm-hmm. And I like to say that because sometimes people have it in their minds that we're unable to give back or we're right. selfish and don't want to give back. But I really want to thank you for sharing your story. Mm-hmm. And for really contributing to the development, the economic and social development of our land.
Definitely. I'm honored and I'm touched and I'm grateful for everyone that I met who has, again, same Be First Convenience, Yardie Catering, and my friend and sound buddy, Hypersound. So without them, my visit would not be as successful as it was. It was incredible.
Well, I want to say thank you to Kim Miller, Site One. And remember, you can contact me at 1-246-269-9660. You can use that as a WhatsApp as well. Or here at Starcom Network, 1-246-269-9660. 4307300. Thank you very much for your emails and your WhatsApp messages. I appreciate them. And you can contact us via email, visionsbarbados@gmail.com. visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And of course, you can go on the VOB929.com website and look for the podcast link and find Visions Radio Program. And you can listen to this and other episodes. So until next week, be safe and love yourself.